Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
29 there, everything was IPs because that's where cars, they had cars stored there. Turns out Alabama Gulf Rail controls the majority of the yard that's there just west of 29. And what had been happening regularly, which is hopefully happening less now, is you had them using that area for storage. They were just storing cars there. And it's like any type of capacity thing. If you have, if you have half of the bathtub filled up with sand, it can only hold half of the water, and it's going to overflow quickly.
Technically water can fill in the cracks in the sand, but okay, fine, sure, I get the metaphor, that if you've got a certain amount of storage area off the rail line, and then you're putting more trains into the total vicinity, then that storage area off the rail line by IP, this is on, the west side of US 29, south of Muskogee Road, by the International Paper, that if you are putting more trains into the total region than that little side storage area, which is pretty big, but still will store, you're going to have problems. And that's why the trains have been blocking roads. And this has, of course, been going on for years. As Commissioner Barry at his town hall last week talking about, what he had learned in the process of trying to solve this problem and recognizing that it was largely, part of it was Alabama Gulf Rail, and realizing having to work with them. And so basically getting them to promise that shouldn't be happening anymore and that they would try to work on that.
Well, what's happening is, when you have normal business, normal business traffic, normal business, transport coming through there on the rail that shouldn't be backing up into 29. When there are a lot of cars stored there, they back up into 29 just through the normal daily, running of the business.
Yeah, exactly. There is another part of this that had to do with CSX that he said, and dealing with Becks Lake Road, which, of course, Becks Lake Road is one of those great Escambia County roads that has two names. What's the other name for Becks Lake Road? Muskogee Road. Same road. So if you ever
it's the same road,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's the same road. You cross the street. Wait, I thought we were on Muskogee. No, you're on Becks Lake. Wait, but back there, exactly, because that's how we do here.
It depends on if there's a train or not. I know that ties in. I know. I've been so mad there.
Before. Right. No, it's a horrible thing. But he said that he's got some agreement from CSX to behave better in a different way as well.
We've gotten some help from them to try to keep that yard empty so that they wouldn't run into 29 by just the normal freight coming in. We have gotten some pretty good cooperation out of CSX for not blocking Becks Lake Road like they did for a long time. They've rerouted, at the time, this was a few years ago, but they had a lot of freight that they were routing through Pensacola that wasn't destined for Pensacola, and they, rerouted that freight so that we're not we're not just a through point for that freight. The freight that you see coming in, especially southbound on that CSX line just east of 29 in Cantonment, is bound for us. So it's been less, and the blockages there have been less.
So what he got out of CSX is basically a commitment that the non-local train traffic, that we were just being the throughput, that has been causing a lot of our problems. And of course, a lot of this all goes back to the fact that the railroads have these unbelievable protection deals from the federal government that local municipalities basically can't interfere with their operations. Now, in part, that facilitated rail travel and made the country what it is today. But in part, it means that they can frustrate anybody they want to frustrate, and we can't do anything about it. But if they can maybe reroute some of their traffic so that it's not going through here, when it doesn't have to come through here, well, you decrease the volume, you decrease the inconveniences caused by that volume. So that's kind of good news. And, and he says, look, to the degree that this has been solved or at least improved, credit to Stephen Barry for that. And, Senator Broxson and other people that have been working on this.
I know it's not ideal. My dear older brother lives in Molino across from Jimmy's Grill. So I'm intimately familiar with the expletives told to me when he's stopped by the train coming and going. You know, at times it is better, but you know, International Paper they've been supportive, and they do have a lot of influence with Alabama Gulf Rail because that's one of their providers, and they've been supportive. Senator Broxson was supportive when we needed some help in those efforts as well.
All right, so I wanted to give some credit to the commissioner for working on this problem and having an impact on it, because I'm going to spend the rest of the day explaining why this town hall was a debacle for him and an indictment of his leadership. 515 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Now it's time for another tip from ADX Digital, your comprehensive digital marketing partners.
Many businesses in our area ask us point blank, why do I need you, meaning ADX Digital, to do my business's digital marketing? Why can't I just do it on my own with Facebook and Google? Well, just because you can does not necessarily mean you should. The reality of it is digital marketing is constantly changing, growing, and evolving. Are you up to date with the latest advancements?
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
We're not anti-construction, but we are anti-compatibility. And the direct thing that I would like to really get, you know, clarity on is this proposal by the developer to use Robinson's Mill as a cut-through, to use a neighborhood that has 60 residents or 60 homes as a cut-through to build a development of 300-plus homes.
Robinson's Mill is the existing subdivision off of East Kingsfield. That's the easternmost one there. That's a little subdivision. You go back in, there's like three streets back there. And this is Scott Barnes talking at the town hall that Commissioner Stephen Berry had last week. And this is where I wanted to start. I have a lot of stuff to say. This is a long town hall. This is like 3.5 hours long. There was a lot of stuff came up in this town hall. And this was a part of it, was the general failure of Escambia County commissioners to properly plan and organize and be able to handle the growth that is happening in our county. Now, you know, we're not unique in this, but it is a failure of leadership over a long time. And Stephen Berry has been a commissioner for now, what, 11 years? He's coming up on 12 years and trying to run for reelection. So it's not like he can blame somebody else for it. And he says, look, Scott Barnes says, they're going to open up a 300-home subdivision out the backside of our small, quaint 60 house subdivision, and is going to devastate our way of life. And even if they did it on Kingsfield, there are still problems. Like, even if they made the exits onto Kingsfield, and we've talked with, you know, Wes Moreno about this, and, you know, the residents are upset. This follows on the Molino development that has, you know, got thwarted to a degree, but they still have, you know, that's still coming. It's just a question of how big it's going to be. And everywhere you go, there are houses popping up like crazy, and we don't have the roads, we don't have the sewer, and we don't have the schools to handle all of this growth. We know this. So anyway, back to Scott Barnes' comments.
We think that it will fundamentally change the character of our neighborhood. And our neighborhood is absolutely unique. At Halloween, kids take hayrides into our neighborhood, and they trick-or-treat from other neighborhoods in your district. They come into our neighborhood, and it's because it's special. It's because it's traffic controlled. It's because there's one way in and out. Kids from Tate come and take photographs at prom and at homecoming in front of our water mill that we have.
And by the way, as he points out, they have a lot of distance on Kingsfield where they could use as the exit. And, you know, he's saying, why do they have to run it through our neighborhood when they don't have to do it that way? And Stephen Berry's response was, well, it's just a proposal. I don't control the proposals. We haven't approved anything yet.
The process is pretty long, and, you know, I do have some influence over what happens, you know, over what gets built, what gets approved, those kind of things. I don't have any influence over what somebody requests. So the proposal that you saw on the internet is, you know, it's the product of somebody's idea about what they could put on the property. You know, that wasn't the result of a conversation with the county saying, hey, you know, we think that's a good idea. That's their proposal.
So he's kind of saying it's not my fault that they've just offered this idea up that we've seen on social media, and we've seen the plans. And, you know, that's not the same as it going through the official process for the county, and that's not same as it being approved. Okay, yeah, but, you know, smart leaders look ahead and look at what might be happening and talk to people who might be planning things and have meetings and say, you know, hey, here's a problem that I see you might be running into, or here's an idea, you know, that might make it make more sense for you. And to just say, well, that's just a proposal, I don't have anything to do with that, is a way of saying, I couldn't have done better. I can't be involved in that. How could I possibly know? It's not my fault. It hasn't gotten approved. Well, I mean, that's a pass the buck kind of answer. That's not a very good answer, right? And he goes on.
There are going to be some entitlements that they do have because of the stub outs in the neighborhood when the neighborhood was platted.
And by the way, it's worth noting, when he says entitlements, what he's talking about is legal options or opportunities that they have as a virtue of them being property owners or the way something has already been built. It's a little bit of a misleading term that the average person, I know because somebody got upset about that exact term in the meeting, but you know, he's not using that in the way you might normally use it, okay? He's using it in a fairly technical sense.
There's, I want to say, 3 stub outs that were put into the plat to be able to access the vacant property.
And what he means is like the little cuts in the road, or maybe a partial road that gets built, like 10 feet of a road, or looks like they were going to put a driveway in, but they didn't actually put the driveway in, but it's meant to be for a road, that kind of a thing. That's what he means by the stub outs.
So,
by the way, I think there's only 1. I don't think there's 3. I looked at the Google Street View of it, and you know, I've been up in there one time before, but there is 1 for sure that looks like a road was going to get built off of a kind of a roundabout there.
So some access through the neighborhood was apparently intended from the beginning, and some of you may, you know, when you were looking at the plat to, you know, to buy in there, may have been aware that there were some stub outs that were put in the plat. That doesn't exist in a lot. You know, that doesn't exist in most neighborhoods, but it does exist there. So they're going to have some entitlements to be able to access the vacant property.
Now, on this particular one, he's actually giving a fairly okay answer. I mean, what he's trying to tell them is you should have known. That's what he's trying to tell them. He's not going to say it that way, but he's trying to tell them, look, you can see a pre-road has already been built there when you first bought your homes. That was already there. In fact, it was there when they were doing construction. Okay, so you can see, and if you looked on the map, you can kind of see where this is likely to become a parcel eventually, and you can kind of see that. But again, he's just trying to tell them that they're wrong. And there's a good lesson in here that everybody ought to pay attention to the stuff that's behind your home, the stuff that's behind your street, okay? And, you know, I know I actually live in a subdivision that's one of those, like, it came in behind, you know? And I understand why the people in front would have been angry about that, okay? But again, it's a question of, well, are you planning for these things and are you allowing people to develop an unrealistic expectation about the nature of their subdivision for a long time? And he even says there's going to be more of this because they don't have any power to stop it. I'll come back to that in a second. Candy's got traffic on the 5s.
And not showing any slowdowns or delays. It looks like at this time everything is running accident-free. I-10, I-110 not showing any issues at all. 87 accident-free. If you have a traffic tip, text it in 437-1620. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, Candy. Back to Stephen Bear at the town hall last week, you know, and he says, look, the problem that y'all are experiencing, that's going to get worse before it gets better.
I think we're going to see more and more of things like this as time goes on, because there is still demand. There's still demand for housing in our market, and the supply of, the supply of undeveloped property for these developments is gradually diminishing. So what you're starting to see, I'm seeing it in the southern part of District 5, but I think we're seeing it even in other parts of Escambia County, where there's something that wasn't developed for many years for whatever reason, and it didn't make sense financially. Well, now they're trying to take another look at it because there is demand and it may be in a good spot. So there, you know, you have somebody new saying, well, maybe I can make it work. So I think that's going to continue as time goes on, especially with some of the parcels, you know, in the southern portion of District 5 that haven't been developed for different reasons that people try to bring forward.
Yeah, and so what he's saying is, you know, you're going to see more of this because we have created a situation, and implied, he's not saying this, but we've created a situation where we're powerless to stop it. We don't have any ability to stop it. Don't get upset about just the proposal until it becomes something actual. Wait for your anger until later.
All I can say is, you know, withhold some degree of ire until things at least look like they're going to be approved or get to the point where it's coming up for approval. Because that's, You know, I can't control what somebody proposes or what they request.
Again, it's not my fault. I can't do anything about it. Don't get too worried about that. But, you know, the problem is that people feel like everything is suddenly in jeopardy, is how they feel. That's how property owners and homeowners in Escambia and Santa Rosa feel, is like, we got to always be looking over our shoulder to watch out that somebody's not going to come in and develop around us and ruin our quality of life because y'all aren't doing enough to protect it. That's like the Molino thing. You know, people got freaked out because they wake up one morning and somebody wants to plop this enormous thing down in the middle of their quality of life. And it seemed like it was almost an unstoppable thing. And it, you know, it did get temporarily paused, a certain portion of it. But that's the problem, is people have come to expect that we're going to have this quality of life, this density, this road, and the roads are already bad.
What do they think? That they just own all the land?
No, that's right. I agree. There's a certain level of unfair expectation by people, but it seems like it's happening all over the place. And then how do they even get notified? Is there adequate notice to them that these kinds of things are happening? And again, it kind of feels like everything's in jeopardy all the time. And I know that's true, you know, several subdivisions around the area, you know, where I live, people have felt that way. And again, you have to look and make sure about what can happen behind your street. That's true. But the job of the county commissioner is to try to find some balance between the people who want to develop and the people whose lives are adversely affected by the people who want to develop. Here's another lady talking at the meeting.
I live off of 29.
Yes, ma'am.
And right now, they have proposed at least 5 different developments off of 29. Now, it's already like a racetrack through there with semi-trucks practically plowing down the school buses. So I want to know, has there been impact studies for all these places? Has there been plans for roads to accommodate those small tracks that they want to go back into? Because those roads aren't wide enough to get anything down to them. And schools. We don't have the schools up there for all these people that you want to bring in.
Those are all fair criticisms, right? And that it just seems to be overwhelming people with the impact on their quality of life. And, you know, and then you had later on in the meeting, and I was talking about the kind of the entitlement concept. If you want to get a sense of the crowd, which is like 150 to 200 people in this room, okay? And there were some who were very, very worked up. I didn't catch this person's last name. First name is Mike.
We speak of entitlements, okay? As far as I'm concerned, these people that are out from out of town building these subdivisions, all this, they're not entitled to nothing. The people here in our community, we're the ones that are entitled to everything, okay? There's a bunch of people here and people that's in the community.
See, even if you say he's wrong, the new people, I was a new person 9 years ago, okay? The new people also have rights. They're buying homes. You know, the developers are building the homes. We got to accommodate people somehow or other. Even if you think he's wrong, okay, that sentiment is strong.
Jesse is a friend. Yeah, I know he's been a good friend of mine. Lately something's changed, it ain't hard to define. Jesse's got himself a girl and I want to make her mine. And she's watching him with those eyes.
We've been, we've been working on trying to get the Buell Interchange, you know, to happen. We've gotten, you know, over the last few years, we've gotten a lot of help from DOT in trying to advance that project. It's the number one priority for our area, for the Transportation Planning Group. We had hopes that the fifth year of the 5-year work program this summer would have the construction of that interchange in that. It did not, for whatever reason.
That means that work that will actually happen scheduled in the next 5 years does not include turning dirt on the Buell interchange, at least not yet, according to Stephen Berry. This is at the town hall that he did last week.
They have funded the right-of-way acquisition, the planning, everything up until the actual construction. As many of you know, construction prices over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years have escalated tremendously, and the construction estimate that they ended up with was nearly twice what it was estimated 5 years ago.
Yeah, and it was bad to begin with.
I did, you know, have some conversations with them last week and have been assured that the construction would get put into the fifth year of the work program this summer. So that gives us a pretty decent idea that we're looking at construction beginning on the interchange probably 6 years from now. But
you hear the reaction to that? Like, People just can't believe it. This interchange.
Oh, he was serious?
Yeah.
6 years?
It's going to start.
Oh, I thought he was joking. So I was like,
no. They were either nervous laughter or I can't believe it. We've been, you know, this project is supposed to be a couple of years away for as long as I've lived here, basically. Not quite, but, you know, close to that. Yeah. And, you know, I know federal things take a long time, and I know FDOT takes a long time, but he's serious. It's going to start in 6 years. So this half century, it might be done. I mean, like, that's kind of where we're at. Just crazy. But, okay, so, you know, the tone of this meeting was aggressive. The people were not happy. They did not like the answers they were getting. A lot of them were very angry, particularly in the big way about development, about, you know, the basic problem of plopping all these houses down and not having the schools and the stormwater and the roads and other kinds of infrastructure to handle all of this new development. So somebody asks the question that I think all of us ask in our heads.
Didn't anybody learn anything when the Navy Federal came in and it was a zoo down highway, you know, 9 miles until they made it 4 lanes?
Did nobody learn from the lesson of Navy Federal? You can't just plop a bunch of people in a place and say, figure it out, because it creates chaos. And now, all these years later, finally got 9 mile widened. We're now 6 years out from the Beulah Interchange being fixed, but you guys keep not learning the lesson.
Why aren't we putting in the roads, then allow all these homes, apartment complexes, and everything else to be built?
All right, so Andy.
Why don't we build the roads first? Why don't we provide for the capacity before we have the stress on all the other infrastructure? Well, his answer was, we just can't do it that way.
The idea about building the roads before the infrastructure comes, that's something, and I've, you know, I've had to say this a few times in a few settings, that it sounds like a very good idea. The reality ends up being that we have needs that exceed the financial resources that we have currently. And this is needs for resurfacing, for dirt road paving, for improvements on areas that exist.
Wait a minute. No, this is not a surprise. Okay, this is something that Commissioner Underhill, when he was in office, was banging the drum about continuously, that to really properly maintain the roads in Escambia County, if I remember correctly, his figure was $17 million to properly handle the roads every year, to which we spend $5 million. Okay, so what Stephen Berry is saying is we can't afford to maintain the stuff we already got. We cannot afford the stuff we already have. To which the logical response is, well, then either find a way to maintain the stuff we've already got, or you got to stop obligating us to maintain more things. I mean, if we're already behind, again, he's been on the board for, 11 years now, so this is his problem, right? He's not brand new to the board. He can't say somebody else failed.
The likelihood of having an elected board as you have with, you know, with me as your representative currently, the likelihood of having an elected board allocate $5-10 million to a road that doesn't have a need currently is not likely. So it's an unfortunate circumstance, but it's the truth. We have needs that need to be done, and you know, putting a road in through the woods is not, it's just realistically, it's not going to happen.
What about a road through the woods where they've clear cut the woods because they're going to put a couple hundred houses there? How about that, Commissioner? I mean, this is a stunning admission. He's saying, look, we've been screwing up a long time and I haven't fixed it because we don't have enough money to spend, and we're not willing to spend the money on the roads that we need to be spending. And so, therefore, we also can't plan ahead. We're so far behind on our bills that it's impossible for us to make any headway on our savings accounts. We can't plan ahead because we're so far behind, and it's an elected board, and he likes to brag about being able to get the votes that he needs, but apparently he can't convince his fellow commissioners that, you know, what Escambia County needs to do is we need to actually pay our bills and we need to plan ahead. You know, an elected board isn't going to go along with me on this, on, you know, this sort of straw man version of the argument, building a road through a forest for a future subdivision.
You know, whether it be Pine Forest, West Roberts Road, I mean, we have needs that exist currently on this system, and it's just not likely you're going to have elected officials that are going to allocate large large chunks of money to projects that aren't currently needed for what might happen in the future.
Well, how about leadership? I mean, why don't you ask? Why don't you say, you know, fellas, this isn't working. And we need to do something different. We need to do something different. This is what I'm hearing from my people. We all know this is a problem. We need to do this differently. No, but the elected board, you know, they're not going to do it. Where's the leadership? And if you're not willing to lead on this issue, maybe somebody else will. We'll come back to this in a second. 717 on News Radio 92.3. This town hall was bad for Stephen Bear. There was a lot of very angry people there about this stuff, asking these questions and getting completely inadequate answers from him. Candy's got traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by New South Window Solutions and Avalon Boulevard clear through Garcon Point Bridge. Traffic on I-10 east and westbound. Traveling at posted speeds right now. No slowdowns reported on Gulf Breeze Parkway east or westbound. 437-1620. It's News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, Candy. Yeah. So back to Stephen Barry in this town hall. I mean, what I suspect his answer would be something along these lines. Well, we got to build these new houses so we can get the ad valorem taxes from these new houses so that we can pay to pave the roads that we already haven't been paving for 15 and 20 years. Acquire more debt? Metaphorical debt? Acquire more obligations? You know? Assets and liabilities? Acquire more liabilities? That's the way you're going to... You're going to build your way out of this problem? Bull. There's an acronym. There's a word. Nonsense. That's crazy.
But yet you're saying in your own words.
Oh, sorry. I don't know if I played this clip and I apologize, but I want to make sure I do play it.
You know, whether it be Pine Forest, West.
Okay, I did play that one. All right. Okay. So somebody says from the audience, wait a minute now. You're telling me we can't afford what we've got, and you want to let thousands of homes be built on this already failing system and create more problems and therefore more liability for more spending having to be done, so we're going to fall even farther behind?
But yet you're saying, and in your own words, you just said that the county right now is strained on maintaining the roads and everything they have now. So how in the world are you going to add 8,000 to 12,000 different places up here in the north end of the county and maintain that when you can't even maintain what you got now? How are you going to do that?
Yeah.
That answer? I mean, it's not an answer, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good point, sir. Yeah.
Whatever.
Whatever. But that's the point. Your answer is, well, I can't do anything. Well, okay. I understand that zoning may come with certain, what he calls entitlements, what, you know, you might think of somebody as, you know, they're allowed to build a certain number of homes because of zoning, let's say, on a land. Well, why does zoning have to be the only thing? Road capacity is not a really complicated one to figure out. Why don't we have a land development code that says something like this? In order to get a permit to build, you have to have the relevant zoning to justify that construction and the road capacity to handle the cars that that construction will put on. And maybe while you're at it, you know, you could have, for example, you know, storm sewer water management could be a part of that. That one's not that hard to figure out. I mean, you might like to also have schools, you might like to also have law enforcement. And this is the conversation about impact fees, right? But forget the, like, where are you going to raise the revenue? Who are you going to charge for it? How about just the basic idea that you're not allowed to build until, as opposed to, oh, we're going to build and then figure it out later, which we don't figure it out later.
Well, now you're talking about 8,000 to 12,000 people. You're going to cram them up here in the North End of County with $2 generals, a Tom Thumb, and Jimmy's Buffet. Up here, and one school, and the school at Millennial Park Elementary, is at capacity. You don't have school bus drivers. You don't have the infrastructure up here to do what y'all are proposing to do. You ain't got it.
So, you know, back to the, not dissimilar to the conversation about Robinson's Mill, I mean, the county is not proposing to do anything. So it's not the county proposing something, but if some of the question is about whether...
He says you're allowing it to happen.
You're allowing it. Well, I understand being upset. I would gauge the degree of unhappiness by what does happen, not what's proposed to happen.
Yeah, but he's right. You're allowing it to happen. You're failing to plan. You're failing to lead. You're blaming somebody else. You're saying we can't afford it. It's not my fault. It's FDOT or it's the people or it's the zoning or it's the entitlements or. Dude, this is your job. This is your job, and people are livid, and rightly so. If you can't do it, maybe somebody else will. And, you know, saying, well, I understand the emotion.
And I understand being upset.
That's reasonably upset for reasons. Saying, well, you know, I understand why people are upset. He doesn't even say I understand why. I understand that you're upset. That's not an answer. 437-1620. So this did not get an awful lot of attention when it happened last week. I went back and watched it just the other day, and I thought, wow, this is big, important stuff. And now I understand why. You know, I think Stephen Barry is concerned about his job in the future. I think that if he's paying attention, Jeff Bergosh has got to be concerned about his job next year. And Lumen May won by 90% last year, but he's up for re-election last year. And at some point, people are going to start to say, you know, somebody's got to fix this problem. Because what's the alternative? We asked it in Future News. We're going to cut back on development. We're going to raise taxes or reallocate money maybe, okay? Or do nothing and you just continue to suck it up and suffer.
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Yourself off the ground, I said, young man, 'cause you're in a new town. There's no need to be unhappy, young man. There's a place you can go, I said, young man. When you're short,
are you
backing
up your iMessages and your texts on the county smart system or whatever it's called now? So anything that is public business is being backed up. Are you doing that on a regular basis? And when public records are being asked for, they're available. Because it seems like that was not the case with one commissioner until magically these appeared.
There's the question. To Commissioner Barry at his town hall last week, are you backing up your personal cell phone, your personal records, texts, and all of that are not on your county cell phone? Are you backing those up? Are you making those available upon request? Because, of course, with Commissioner Bergosh's whole text and the drama surrounding that.
My personal iPhone is backed up on the cloud that I control. It's my responsibility to provide public records when asked. I have, Dawn in my office. She can pull all the emails and anything like that. It's my responsibility to provide the public records when asked for them, the text messages when asked for them. And I have done so for thousands of messages over the last few years, thousands and thousands of messages, and have spent hundreds and hundreds of hours cultivating those text messages to turn over for public records requests of various types.
So. But
not in the county system. No, I'm not putting my personal cell phone in the county system. No, for a myriad of reasons.
Well, name a couple. I mean, name a couple. Why wouldn't you put your See, here's the thing. He's complaining about the hundreds of hours that he's spent, you know, satisfying these annoying public records requests. Solve that problem, man. Just put your cell phone on the county system and then it'll back up your records. And, you know, if you want to, you know, take stuff off of there or have it deleted or say certain phone numbers don't have anything to do with public business, that's fine. But then you don't have to do this. Then you can literally give the job over to the county attorney or whoever might handle the public records instead of you having to personally comb through it all the time. But I mean, I know you didn't actually give any reasons for your myriad of reasons, but it sounds like the reason would be to do it that way, to put your cell phone, your personal cell phone on the county system, and then you solve that problem of time. 437-1620, 437-6, and you avoid the legal issues of that you're not disclosing the public records properly because it's all being done for you. Different topic had come up prior to that. This is one I was not surprised got asked, but I was a little bit like, oh, okay, all right, go on, town hall people.
You have been pursuing a very lucrative retirement package as a county commissioner at taxpayer expense.
Do you hear the groans in the background? You've been pursuing a very lucrative retirement package as a county commissioner, and the people are like, murmur, where's my torch? Come on now.
And I'm just wondering if you can tell all the folks here, including myself, if you're still pursuing that. And if you are, why, as an elected official, when, as someone mentioned earlier, we are highly taxed and increasingly taxed with property tax.
So this is about the 401A or the ICMA program. This is the alternative to the Florida retirement system, where the county commissioners and other layers of employed people basically get the money, goes into their personal retirement fund rather than going to FRS, of which only, I think it's 8%. It could be higher than that, but it's 8 to 12%, something like that, actually goes into what will eventually pay for them. A lot of the rest of it goes to fund the system itself. And so, and, you know, pay attention to his answer. And by the way, it doesn't cost the county any more money because it's the same percentage, but it is a massively more beneficial program for the individual commissioners.
When I was elected, there was a retirement plan in place that had been in place since 1997, 1996, something like that, that other commissioners had participated in, and I wasn't aware of it. And during my second term, I became aware of the plan, and it would more align with what I would, at my age, what I would try to do. So I was told at the end of my second term, I could opt out of Florida retirement system and opt into this plan. So that's what I did. And after 6 months of participation, the clerk decided the plan was illegal and stopped making payments.
Wow. You know, there's two kind of lies, right? There's the lie of commission and then there's the lie of omission. You know, there's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. That's truth and nothing but the truth, but it is not the whole truth. The reason this became controversial was the part in the middle. Remember the part in the middle where he was angry that he didn't realize as a financial planner that he had access to this plan to put 50%, it's higher than that actually, of his annual salary into a personal fund instead of going to the FRS system, because Commissioner Bender had opted into it, not really knowing that the percentages were that high. It's crazy. But anyway, then when that all came out, he's like, I want in. They wouldn't let him in. So he waited till he was fully vested, which he is now fully vested. So he's already getting a pension from the FRS, and he wants to switch over to this plan, which he has done, and Pam Childers has now put a stop on it. Lumen May, same thing. But they did, that wasn't good enough. They wanted $250,000 in back pay for the money they would have gotten if they had opted in at the beginning of their terms. That's the middle part that he's not saying, that he's leaving out of this narrative. And why? Well, because that's a very inconvenient thing to say to a group of 200 angry residents. There was a part there in the middle where I tried to get $250,000 y'all to pay me back pay on. That did not come up. We'll come back to this in a second. Candy's got Traffic on the Fives.
Traffic on the Fives brought to you by Gulf Breeze Natural Gas. Don't get caught off the grid if a hurricane hits. Gulf Breeze Natural Gas are in Gulf Breeze and Pensacola Beach. It looks like it's stop and go still between 10 Mile and West Roberts Road in Cantonment. That's southbound. And I-110 South, the exit to Brent Lane has an accident with fire and EMS on scene. One lane was blocked earlier. It looks like 98 Navarre and Gulf Breeze are completely clear now, except for, near the lights and stuff like that. But, hey, if you have traffic tips, text them in. 437-1620. News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much,
Candy.
Yeah,
this is juicy.
Back to Stephen Berry, yeah. The 401A retirement plan. And so he says,
what the plan did locally was said, well, I'm not interested in receiving a monthly pension for the rest of my life. I'm not interested in anything that the Florida retirement system has. I would rather the same amount that's getting shipped to Tallahassee go to this retirement plan that no one else will have a responsibility to pay me when it's done. Whatever balance is there when I would not be a commissioner anymore, that would be the balance.
So he's making it sound like he's not going to get a pension? I mean, he paid into the FRS for 8 years. He's vested. Is he saying he's going to forego his entitled pension? Because he's making it sound like this is a good deal for the taxpayer. Right? That's kind of his take here is, I'm doing y'all a favor. You don't have to keep paying me a pension. I get a lump sum payment.
It's the same percentage. That's what the plan was that was adopted nearly 30 years ago.
And that's true.
I'm shocked that it's been such a, contentious issue. If the dollars that are being paid into the plan are the same, and I'm foregoing any type of pension benefit when I retire. I mean, to me, that seems like probably a better deal to taxpayers if they don't have to pay me or my wife for the rest of our lives.
Well, again, I have a question. Does that mean he's not going to take his FRS that he'd been paying into for 8 years? I mean, it sounds like that's what he's saying. Or is he just, you know, not declaring that part? But also, remember that $250,000 attempted cash grab? That was the reason it was so controversial. That was the thing that got people the most worked up.
That's for the court to figure out. And
whether
that's
it's
why,
legal.
Don't say a whole lot about it publicly. It's for the court to figure out, and they'll figure it out.
I don't say too much about this. I don't like being in the news. I don't like being on the news. And by the way, follow-up comment on all that.
The percentages are set by the state of Florida. So if that's what the employee costs, and the county taxpayers are not any worse off, plus the state taxpayers don't have to make FRS payments to them or their wives for the rest of their lives, seems like a better situation to me. I believe the narrative of it and those things are probably more political than they are in reality, because I'm going to guess that that's not what you've heard. But that's the truth.
Well, again, there are parts of the narrative that haven't been heard even at the meeting last night. But again, the basic difference here is if you're putting your, God, is it 58%? It's some ridiculous number, which is, he's right, step by the state. Had it gone to FRS, a slice of that would eventually come back to him, again, in the 8 to 12% zone or something like that. The rest of it goes to fund the pension system to pay other obligations to make sure that system stays solvent instead of getting all of it for himself, which is, look, if you give me the choice between those two things, sure, I'd rather take 60 or 58% of a pretty substantial annual salary the same way. I'm not saying it's a bad financial choice. I'm saying, but that's the reason people are objecting, is that the pension system, the FRS system, is supposed to be getting that money to stay afloat, and here you're getting it into your pocket, which the speaker, Jacqueline Rogers, brought up.
57% within the FRS wouldn't all go to the commissioner. A lot of it would go to prop up the FRS system and keep it solvent. So by the commissioners taking the 57%, or if it's up to 58% now, or the senior staff at the 34%, that goes directly into your guys' pocket, and it doesn't do anything to keep the FRS system solvent for the other employees that need to have that.
There, see, that's and the attempted back cash grab. Those are the things that have people worked up about it, because it just seems so. I mean, the back pay grab, that was problematic. The actual just taking the payments, well, that's what the court's going to figure out. Somebody's texting me, and I appreciate the clarification that FRS, I guess, has two different plans, a pension and investment. The short-term employee less than 20 years would be the investment plan, I guess, and FRS is using the investment plan to shore up the pension side. That's why the investment side doesn't get so good. So I appreciate that clarification. He's still got the account, I assume, having paid into it for 8 years. I assume. I mean, I'd be stunned to find out that money's just completely gone away, but again, he's kind of styling it like that's, you know, I'm not getting any of that. I'm getting this other thing over here. So, yeah, 437-1620, remember, you know, there's truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and then there's lies of omission are every bit as important as lies of commission, when especially you claim or pretend like, well, I've told you the whole story.